All right, welcome to the very exciting number 20 version of the Weird for Good Hangout, featuring me, Aaron Nichols of weirdforgood.com, and my very special guest, super excited to have her with us, Megan Silito. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Awesome. Yeah, glad to have you here. Okay, so for people that don't know Megan, if you haven't read the blog for a long time, Megan was my coach, is my coach, and someone that I've had a lot of experience with as a client, a coachee of hers, and so I'm pumped to have her here, and we're going to just kind of fire off on the last couple blogs that have been posted. This is the second time we've tried to get together online, and I'm glad that it worked out, and it's the number 20, so that's a kind of a feat here, and so, Megan, how can people find you online? Where do you want to direct them to if they want to find out more about you through the web?
Well, right now I am, my website's a little bit under construction, but there is information there. It's megansilito.com, and that's M-E-G-A-N, S as in Sam, I-L-L-I-T-O.com. Or if you're interested, I have a specific program that is actually, I'm having a website being built called Play Your Way to Money. It's a 90-day money game where people come in the game. We have weekly calls, and they look at increasing their financial flow and looking at blocks and restrictions and clearing that up. And the idea is to triple or quadruple the investment of the course. So the idea is to create a bigger flow of money through the course, and it's just playyourwaytomoney.com, so you can get some information on that there.
Awesome. Cool. Well, if people remember, there is some proof in some blogs that I had written about, I think back in probably November-ish or something, that working with Megan produced money in my world, and I wrote about it. So if you guys want to check that out, that'd be awesome. So Megan, you're talking about blocks and restrictions and things. Can you kind of tell everybody quickly, you know, you're a coach and you've been coaching for several years. You want to give them a quick background on that and where you're kind of where you're at and where you're from?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this kind of work for about 18 years now in come October, and I have reinvented myself many times along the process. I originated in something called rapid eye technology or rapid eye therapy, and that was a stress release model, a PTSD release model, and it was really, that's where I learned about like patterns and blocks and restrictions. What I learned about was that we all had these beliefs that came to us sometimes even before we are aware we have the beliefs. Oftentimes they're formed by the time we're 6 years old, that literally stop us from going forward or block things from us. Because if we don't, so for instance, if I don't believe color exists, I literally won't see color. I'll literally, you know, search out things that are black and white. And so the beliefs kind of act like filters. And the rapid eye therapy was a way of helping the brain literally download these filters and clear out these filters so that we could see clearly. The way that I like to describe rapid eye is it's like a windshield. If you're driving down the road and your windshield's covered with mud, and it's like, you know, you can say, oh, wow, why am I crashing? Why am I hitting things? Why am I, you can go on and on and on about, well, why is this happening to me? The truth is that most of us are driving around with muddy windshields. And so rapid eye was a way to clear that windshield, a way to see more clearly. And so I really, is a very powerful tool. In fact, even in my coaching now, I still use it when people have, seems like they have a big negative belief that's holding them back. But one of the things that I learned through that process is that, you know, a certain percentage of my clients would just take off. Once they cleared the windshield, they would like, boom, off they'd go in their car on their journey. And others seem to kind of, they would get clear, but they would go create other kinds of problems or messes for themselves. And I, as I looked at, why is this happening? Why are some people so successful with this and some people less successful? And what I realized was that the people that were successful, they knew where they wanted to take the car once they got the mud off the windshield. And so they had an idea of what their purpose was. They had an idea of what their goals were. And so when I helped them clear the pathway, then they just took off. And what I that's when I got interested in coaching, actually, because Rapid Eye is very much about clearing and learning to think in new ways. But then I started getting interested in something called genius work, which has been a big flagship of mine, is helping people find what their genius is, what they're good at, what they love to do, and help them channel that in a way that allows them to be profitable. And that's where sort of the financial and money training also came in, along with the genius coaching. And I realized that it wasn't enough to just help people clear. I wanted to help people discover what direction they actually wanted to drive the car in, so that once we cleared the windshield, they had somewhere to go. And so I just, you know, I've got a lot of training in a lot of different things, hypnosis, NLP, trained with Gay and Katie Hendricks, like you, trained with Steve Chandler, Rich Litman, a whole host of other people. As my whole philosophy is, if I find something that works, something that helps create any kind of change, any kind of transformation, even if it's like standing on your head and, you know, drinking water at the same time, if I could see that it produced results, I'd go learn about it. And so I'm kind of an amalgamation of a lot of different tools and techniques, and then there's just the thing that is intuitive, that is who I am, that comes through me when I work with people. So, you know, my whole passion is really helping people find what they're passionate about and have them get traction in it and produce results in it in a way that feels satisfying to them.
Wow. Well, I can speak to the fact that experience and the things you provide are awesome. And actually, you know, one of the things when we were working together on genius ideas, this hangout, the reason that someone is out there watching or listening to these hangouts is because of a prompt from Megan saying this is another step in a way that, you know, we talked about the word teacher or, you know, different things, but a way that I can share part of me beyond the writing and in a way that can connect in other ways. So anyway, if you're watching this, it's because of Megan, and I'm super, super excited to have you here. So the other thing I love, and I just, you know, I miss our conversations about metaphors and all this stuff. When you're talking about the dirty windshield, you know, that's sort of where the most recent blog post I threw out there a metaphor that came to me doing some simple gardening stuff, and it also reconnected back to a story that was us working together on a big heaping steaming pile of crap, I'll call it, that I, in my words, someone stuck my nose into one day, and then we had a phone call that next day, and it affected me in a way that I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I was just fired up and pissed off, and how dare they? And I had, you know, a big chip on my shoulder. I bring this to you in a conversation, and you showed me the gem of opportunity. You showed me the present that had been given to me, the gift. And so, could you see the link in the compost heap theory versus kind of how we work together on that issue?
Yeah, absolutely. And I could probably link it back into my windshield metaphor as well. You know, it's like we're all dry, like all of us have some kind of mud on our windshield, right? It's like it's the nature of being human is like there's certain things we're clear about and certain things that we're not clear about. The problem is we're not clear about what we're not clear about a lot of times. And so there's these big blocks in our vision that disable us from seeing. And like in your compost metaphor, we think that we can just get by, just shove it aside and not do anything with it, and that, you know, we can move on with our lives. But the problem is that we're driving with this big block, and we're always having to look around it, you know, to be able to see anything. And so it's taking up all this energy. And I remember that day with you is I think I was really excited for you. I mean, you were like, you got on the call like really in your poop, man, like literally, right? And yeah. In your pot, your heaping steaming pile of crap, I think you refer to it as, which I think is really, I like that, is very tangible. But I, you know, that's why I was really excited, because it's like, for you, like one of the things is you're such a nice guy. You're trying so hard to be good, to do it right, to get conscious, to like, you know, you're just a good guy. But, and I have the same thing, which is that it's really hard for those of us who are really trying to be good to own things like anger. You know, to actually say, hey, yeah, I'm mad about that. This pisses me off. Or, you know, it's a natural human experience. So in your case, there was a lot piled up around anger because you were trying to override it and kind of carry on with your life and not have it, you know, negatively affect you. You know, I think that's our intent when we kind of pile emotion to the side. So I saw it as a great opportunity because anything that we suppress or repress, I like the idea of compost because compost is about, what's the word I want to say? It's like recycling, right? And that's true with this energy that we're like always looking around and driving around and spending all this energy carrying around. It's like that energy actually can be used for things that we're passionate about. I so often I see repressed anger turn into passion. That's a big key. If somebody's not passionate or excited about their life, I always look to see if they've got a compost full of anger somewhere because it's like, it's just fuel. That's all it is. It's just energy. But if we don't allow ourselves to express it, then that energy works against us. That energy is something, it's like this weight that we're carrying around everywhere. So, I remember that day, and I remember you like, what do you mean this is good? This is bad, you know? And it's like, no, it's like life brought to you a heap that you try to put to the side, but you didn't realize what that heap was costing you because you've been carrying it around, you know? And
go ahead.
Like you said in the blog, like, you know, it's like, it's not that it's not there. It's just there's this sort of hidden cost that we don't realize, you know?
Yeah, and when you're talking about energy to carry, you know, we could say that we're being metaphoric about that or that we're kind of speaking in generalizations. But actually what was so cool about that day is you taught me that this is energy that you can physically move around and that you can physically release through a physical action. You know, that's what that blog was really about. And even that's what I'm talking about with the compost pile is, you know, physically tossing this hot grass, you know, these hot, wet grasses, these clumps, physically tossing them around actually is what starts to release that heat and starts to dissipate the energy that was built up. So all the power that negatively has on us is about leaving it alone. And you really taught that to me that day, is that leaving it alone and just, you know, or looking around it all the time instead of looking at it is where its power lies. There's actually not a source of energy within it that is, say, one hurt from my past or whatever. There's not one ember of coal in the middle that you have to go and douse. It's like, it doesn't even have a source other than the fact that it's been left alone forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thank you for reminding me about the physical piece because that's really my training with Gay and Katie Hendricks has really taught me that. I'm a very kinesthetic learner, and that was the first sort of classroom where I felt gotten because it's like we learn through movement. We learn through body exercises, and that's where I knew. It's like, oh, this is why I haven't been able to, like, you know, undo some of my emotional past is because I've been trying to deal with it by sitting still, you know, by like, okay, I'm going to journal or whatever. And those things are useful, but there's also some of that energy that gets logged in our bodies. And so, you know, like one of the things that I do sometimes is I'll have people do what I call 10 minutes of like anger play or sad play or whatever. And for 10 minutes, they put sound on and they move their bodies and they breathe and they, you know, they're gyrating all over the place because emotion is just energy. And so we can move it through creating energy in our body and creating movement in our body. So it's like you talk about, like, you know, mess up the compost pile a little bit. And it really does that. I have a great story to this end, which is I had a couple fly in from Atlanta to work with me, and it was quite a prominent surgeon, and so they were actually quite professional, if you will, or a professional couple, and so they were all kind of proper and such, and they came in, when they came in the door, they were in a fight, you know, and I was like, and I hadn't I think I had worked with them one other time. We didn't have a lot of working history together, but I said, okay, when they came in the door, I said, you're totally welcome to continue your fight. I had these two yoga balls in my office, and I said, but the only way I'm going to let you keep fighting is if you get on the balls and you bounce while you fight. They couldn't sustain the fight for more than 30 seconds. The reason is, and this is a real powerful trick, is that if you're moving and breathing, you literally cannot stay in your survival brain, which is where our fights and conflicts come from. When we're in conflict, when you're in the grip, you're in your, and you, I know you've talked about this on here before, the croc brain. Like, you and I have talked about that survival brain, right? And that croc brain only sees things in black and white, right and wrong. And so, you know, when you're fighting to be right in that argument, you're in your croc brain. You're in that 3% of you. And what they didn't know is that when I had started them bouncing on the ball, they literally could not stay in their croc brain. They have literally, when you move your body, when you breathe, you light up your whole brain. So you begin to see a bigger picture rather than that one little thing you're fighting for. And they just started laughing with so quickly. They started laughing. They said, I don't even remember what we were fighting about. And the funny thing is I also did coaching with their daughter, and their daughter came in, you know, a couple months later and said, what have you done to my parents? And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, they're talking to me in different rooms, and they're both bouncing on balls while they're talking to me. And I was like, that's awesome, you know? Like, it is just really, it's a really great example of how movement shifts our thinking.
Yeah, that's so cool, and I think something that I don't want people to miss here is, okay, so if you're in that fight, in that moment with your wife or with your husband that's in your office, did that fix the fight? Well, in a way, it really does, because in that moment, if you've lost that fight, then that fight is not going to gain any more steam. That fight isn't going to snowball any more than it was. And I think the thing that I love that happened with our work is, you know, it's a tool, and you can bring that tool out again and again, and over time, you know, you can actually make a real difference in those relationships or in your own way of thinking about things, that if you're even aware of the fact that me sitting in one spot being all wound up and bound up is only going to make it worse, if I'm just aware of that and I can loosen myself up and get new thoughts or get more thoughts, creativeness, whatever, you know, that's something you can go back to time and again. And it, and I think that's the work that's so neat to share here with people. I don't want people to think that, well, they probably just went back to fighting, you know, after that. Like you said, even down the road, they still use that little trick, that little tool. And you can make changes over time, real transformation with that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's I don't know what the percentage is, but it's high. Most of the fights we're having, I'm talking internally too, like the fights we have with ourselves at the fight, but also the fights or upsets we get into with others, especially our, you know, our partners, is that most of that is from habit. Most of that is because we're actually don't trust feeling good. We're scared of intimacy and those positive feelings that come with intimacy. And so we literally create upset more because it's what we know and we're not yet opened up to the idea that life can be about ever-expanding creativity and joy. So most of the fighting is regurgitated, rehabitual pattern, and there's actually no legs to the fight. Most of the fights we're having have no legs to them. And the truth is that we just need to shift our state of consciousness, and in that new state of consciousness, that fight doesn't exist. So let me say that another way. Einstein said that you can't solve a problem from the same level of mind that created the problem. Most of the problem was actually created in your survival brain. So that's the only place it exists, is when you get into that survival place. So if you can shift your state of consciousness, which is what body-centered work is all about, is you're not trying to think your way out of a problem. That's like the worst thing you can do. move your way out of a problem, because then your thinking actually becomes a higher level because you're accessing more of your creative brain.
That's awesome. It reminds me, when you're talking about what we know and habit, you know, could you give them a quick version of set point? Because I think that's what I related to when you spoke about that, is if I have a set point that there's only so much good that can happen in my day or my week, and then I'm supposed to kind of carry around a whole bunch of junk too, or I'm always supposed to be frustrated because of work or whatever. I actually have this set point thing that I, when you taught it to me, I've used it with great success with other clients as well. But that kind of is woven in there, I think.
Absolutely. So I'll reference my mentor's game, Katie Hendricks, because this is where I first heard about this set point. I'd actually heard about it in other forms, as we have, you know, everybody knows about the fat thermostat in the body, right? And I learned a long time ago in my training that we also had a money thermostat. And I'll go into this, defining this a little bit more in a minute. And then when I started my work with the Hendricks, they actually, and you guys, you can look them up online. They've got just a massive amount of material, even for free, that you can get online. They're the foremost experts in relationship and genius in the world. They're kind of the coaches. And they talk about what they believe is there's actually one issue on the planet, and that's how much good and or joy can we express and experience. And most people, this was 10 years ago. I'm imagining this has shifted some, but their numbers at that time were that we can only feel joy for, the average person can only feel joy for every 4 to 6 seconds before they have to do something to sabotage it. And so what I mean by that is, like, you know, you might get a new dress and then you go, oh, yeah, but I'm fat in it, right? So it's like you've got this thing to be excited about, and then the next thing you do is you think something or say something that kind of brings your energy down. I played this pattern out a lot in sport, where I would get to the top level. I was, you know, being recruited, like, you know, player of the year, et cetera, et cetera, and I would get really sick or I'd get injured. Right at the kind of at the top of my game. So what was happening, and what happens for a lot of us, is that we're coming up against 2,000 to 3,000 years of programming that say, the programming says, must struggle, must see how much pain I can endure. You know, that's really been the motto of the last couple thousand years, up until about the last 30 years, where we've been exploring, well, hey, maybe I can have a life that I love. Hey, maybe I can have a conscious relationship, a loving relationship, as opposed to it just being, you know, marriages of survival. Okay, well, you know, you go hunt, I'll gather, you know, and we'll survive by being married. So much of everything we did up until the last 30 years was about survival. So in our genetics, there is this warning against anything that feels good, because, you know, if I'm out willy-nilly, you know, back 200 years ago, and I'm just, you know, joyfully picking my flowers, I may not be aware of an animal that might be there to attack me, or love and joy and creativity was a threat to the survival of our species 1,000 years ago. So we began to distrust it over time. Then we, you know, we grow up, and then we have experiences like, oh, you know, like I won the soccer game, and then you crash on your bike on the way home. What wires together fires together. So in our mind, when I have something good happen and then something bad happens after that, I begin to believe that that bad thing is connected to the good thing. So the next time something good happens, I'm getting a little suspicious. I think maybe something bad might happen right after. And if it doesn't, I might make the bad thing happen so that I'm not surprised by it, if that makes any sense. So, you know, some people have a set point for a lot of joy and creativity and love, and some people have very low set points. And so a lot of the work that I do with people is about expanding that set point, because I know, Aaron, if I can help you maybe double your set point, you're going to do just fine. If you're open to joy and creativity and opportunity and aliveness, you're going to be a magnet of attraction for that. You know, and so a lot of my work with people is about expanding that set point. is a lot of us have a really low set point. And I think that because, you know, we're trying to change programming that's thousands of years old, we've only had a few years go at it, and I think all of us in this consciousness movement are really, really trying to change that set point and trying to have life be more about learning through joy and love rather than learning through struggle. It's like, it's a total paradigm shift. It's like, can I learn through my creativity? Can I learn through being happy, the things I need to learn in life, you know, as opposed to the no pain, no gain model?
Yeah, yeah, that's so awesome. I love that people are getting this information out there and hearing this stuff, because I think it's just few and far between. So the other thing about set point that I loved when you showed me was, you know, it is so hardwired for us that if our set, if we really go and push something way up out of our normal set point for happiness or whatever, you know, we'll get that rebound back. But if we can make small steps that just barely move our set point a little bit at a time over time, you know, I think for me, really over the last few months, that has shifted in a big way, but it happened in small increments, and I was able to release those little points where maybe I would have gotten snapped back, you know. I think a lot of our work together helped me with that, so.
Yes, and I like when you talk about little steps. The set point cannot be shifted in large sweeping movements. The reason is that it triggers the croc brain. If we get feeling a little bit good or a little bit better, the croc guy just kind of opens his eyes and goes, "All right, nobody died. I'm going back to sleep." But if we make a big shift in our ability to feel good, like if we shift too fast, then that croc brain begins to work on bringing us back down to that set point because it doesn't trust that real big positivity. So it's actually way better to make these little incremental shifts, like, you know, like we're going along, make a little shift, but then we learn how to sustain that little bit higher level. Maybe it's 2%, 3%, 5% more, right? And if we can sustain that for a little, then it creates a new set point. And then we shift it a little again, shift it a little again. And part of it is just being aware. I mean, there's been times where I've been in an upset with my partner and I've stopped and I went, wait a minute, this is on the back end of a really good weekend, a really happy time, a really intimate time. And I get that my system is saying, hey, like, I'm topping out, right? And it's interesting because we both understand that, and it's fight over in that moment when we understand that that's actually what's happening. One of the best things that we can do, people can do when they notice that they've hit that set point, is like something really good happened and then they kind of sabotaged it in some way, is that to take a rest, to take space, especially in partnership. When you've just had a real great intimate time together, it's really important to take space. Go get a massage, go for a walk, go into separate rooms, because the body has to adjust to that, to your set point rising, to that positive energy flowing through you. It needs some time to integrate it. So anything that you can do physically, so back to using the physical, right, is that, you know, go for a walk, go work out, get a massage, go have some really nummy, healthy food, but take some time and let your body integrate. So anytime you have a really good thing happen, give yourself some integration time. And that's one of the number one thing that the Hendricks teach to shift your set point is to rest, appreciate, and celebrate when you have something rise up for yourself, whether it's something positive in your relationship or your career or, you know, something great happens in your family, to really give yourself the space to let your body integrate it, because it's your body that's trying to learn that it's okay to feel good, because your body is scared of its survival. It's scared that feeling good means it's not going to survive. So you have to train your body that it's good to feel good and it's safe to feel good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm just kind of taking all this in and loving it along the way. You know, we did want to get together last week, and we probably could do, another 5 or 8 minutes here for people, if that's cool with you.
Absolutely.
And when you're talking about good things happening, you know, that brought me back to last week's post, which was about kind of like the flow, being in the flow, being out of the flow, For me, the source of that blog was about a little project, not a big deal, but at the restaurant we're going to sponsor this like cruise in deal at the Princeton Community Days. And what was kind of funny for me was that, you know, the idea came to us from a friend. A friend said you should try doing a cruise, like a car show thing. Well, then as soon as we said, oh, now here comes an opportunity to do it at this Community Days thing, then all of a sudden I make a little poster for it, and now I'm getting people wanting to sponsor it, people wanting to give money for it, people wanting to be involved. It was just funny because, you know, I have felt like I've been battling uphill in so many ways with the coaching world or with, you know, certain clients or whatever, and it's like this one thing comes along, and it almost drove itself, you know what I mean? Like, you'll just have these little things that you know, I didn't create it, but I was in the flow of it, so... I was just laughing along the way. It was all fun. It was good. And you know, there's been a lot of things that weren't in the flow. So I think this is a play on what you were just talking about, which is, can we learn in those good times? I don't have to struggle. I don't have to have the pain in order to have the gain. And so what are we learning about that? Because I don't regret the struggles. I don't regret the trying and failing. But I think you may have another take on that too, about being in the flow or out of the flow, and maybe that's a little too broad, but.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking on particular challenges in our lives and saying, you know what, like there's a woman in my women's coaching group who took on CrossFit for like, I can't remember if it was 3 months or 60 days or something like that. And so 3 times a week, she got up at 5 a.m. and went to CrossFit just to challenge herself, just to, like, you know, kind of push herself in a particular direction. And, it was really awesome because at the end of it, she was like, I'm really glad I did that. And I'm really glad that I have a really well-developed skill for facing into challenges and doing hard things. I now want to learn the skill called doing things easeful. I now want to learn that, you know. So I guess what I want to say to that is there, you know, to everything there is a season. There is a time and a place to push ourselves. There really is. And I think there's a time and a place to really let go and let things come to us. And then I think over time we find the balance of those things. You know, those balance of times of challenge and those balance of times of things just sort of coming to us. And to me, that's kind of a bigger flow, because if I'm feeling inspired to challenge myself, then that's part of my flow. But if I'm living my life and it's just freaking hard and I just keep going, oh, I should do this because I'm a lazy, no good, blah, blah, I better go challenge myself here, that, to me, that's working against the flow. That's not a positive challenge. That's not a challenge that's coming from your inspiration. You know, and inspiration means from spirit. So if spirit says, move your butt, then move your butt. And you're going to be in the flow and you're going to get the support to do that. But what I see so often and so much in our culture is this conditioning called life is hard. Life is hard, life is hard. And anything that's good must be hard. And I don't think that's useful. But I do think it's useful to understand that, yes, things can come to us. We can be in that flow where things just like appear out of nowhere, and that's awesome. And there's times where we really have to go do something to make things happen. And it's really about really listening to our inspiration, listening to our heart to know, you know, when to press the gas and when to press the brake.
Well, I love that. And I think that for me, what you're saying is, back to, I don't know if it's Byron Katie or you would know, but you know, there's really only two emotions, and it's like the kernel of love or the kernel of fear. You know, which one are we coming from in that decision to do whatever? I mean, I can work out of fear, right? I can work out, like you said, because I'm a lazy bum, and I might gain 20 pounds, and I shouldn't eat this, and there's all these things, and I'm just saying what normally happens in my brain, you know, every day. But, you know, that is that croc brain. That's the fear. That's a place to come from, that the struggle in that big picture, that bigger flow, like you said, it's a painful struggle that basically only leaves you with, okay, I did enough, or it's really hard to, I think it's hard to really feel completed in that. If you do it from a place of love, whatever it is, then that's a whole different ballgame. It's like, hey, I gave this thing a shot. It wore me the heck out, but I gave it a shot, and you know, I enjoyed it. Or I don't know. I think it's, can we ask ourselves that question? Where are we coming from with this thing that's right in front of us in the moment? And maybe even try to shift ourselves over, or just try to be aware of what's driving me. Is it fear driving me here? And if it is, then I can do something about that. If it's love that's driving me here, then I can release everybody else's worries about what I should or shouldn't be doing. But because I know I'm doing it out of love, and that will always produce something somehow, somewhere, you know, out there.
That's a really good way to put it. You know, if I'm going to the gym because I love my body and I want to do something good for my body, it's going to be a very different experience. And also, the results change. Like, I had a trainer who, I mean, he eventually coached with me, but he, even at the time that I first started with him, didn't have a lot of practice in consciousness or anything like that. But he sent me home one day because I came in, I'm tired, I'm, like, not in a good headspace. And he's like, you're not going to produce very many results from this state. It'd be better for you to go home and nap. And I was like, what? You know, because my whole come from had been, you know, like a lot of us, you just push through stuff. You just, if you're going to get results, you just push through it. And I think there are times that we need to not give up so soon on things. But I think, again, we're in a pendulum swing. Our society is so in the ignore your body, ignore the signals. Like think about all the pills we take, right? It's like, we're not going to listen to a headache. We're just going to take a pill. We're not going to listen to this. I don't want to feel this pain. Well, you know, so I'm just going to mask it. And then we end up getting more hurt and more injured and all of that. So I actually think that most of us actually could learn to go to the other direction a little bit rather than always pushing through, to really just listen. What are the signals? Hey, pain, you know what pain says? Pain is asking us to go in a different direction. First time you touch a hot stove, you know that. The pain is saying go in a different direction. Don't keep your hand here. You know, and most people think they're supposed to push through pain, but often that doesn't take them in the direction of flow. It takes them away from where they're designed to be. Where we're designed to be, it's like, you know, it's like God is not going to give you a signal. Like, if your purpose is teaching, let's say, he's not going to make that painful for you. He's not going to make that a dread for you. It's going to be something that you enjoy. It's going to be something that you're drawn to. And so the things that are painful are literally telling us go in a different direction. It's not about pushing through. And the pain is also a signal. It's telling us, hey, you know, slow down. A lot of times flus and stuff like that are our bodies telling us to slow down. And so, you know, rather than masking the symptoms and continuing to try to push through it.
Yeah, and I'm loving how you're talking about pushing through. I think that if there's a challenge or a struggle in pursuit of something you love or in pursuit of purpose, that challenge or struggle is delicious instead of painful.
Yes.
Like, one person can look at it and say, man, I'd never get up at 5 in the morning to go do what you're doing or whatever it is. But for that person in that moment, if they're doing it from that place of passion and purpose, that's just part of what makes it that much more interesting to them, or that much more of a challenge. It's not just pain for the sake of, like you said, a message, a signal, a stop, a roadblock, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, Megan, this has been awesome, and I want to get us wrapped up here so you can move on to other things. Otherwise, we could just talk all evening if that's fine with you. But anyway, I love seeing you here and speaking with you, so I so much appreciate it. This is number 20 of the Weird for Good Hangout. So your idea how many months ago has produced all the way up till now through through this space. So I deeply thank you for that.
You are so welcome. And I just want to say, like, I just appreciate you taking the toss. You know, it's like I have seen in you this teacher. You know, you're so good with words, like even like running this show and everything. You just, you language things so well in a way that we can hear it. And, you know, I'm just really excited that you took the challenge to step more deeply into and learn about your teacher self. And, you know, 20 is amazing. I mean, people start and stop things all the time. And the fact that you're still going with this, I think, is awesome. And I see that you're getting better and better and really serving people with this, with the messages. I love how real and raw you are. We need more teachers like you. We need more real and raw teachers that are just not pretending to be all perfect and being really being truthful about the rawness of life and the realness and the ups and downs of life, because that is life. And I love how you negotiate that and how you share that with us. So I am so proud of you for launching this, and I know that it's serving many people.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I accept your compliment, and I think if that's the only thing I know how to do is to be raw and real, then that's what I'll do, because I really don't have enough more education or skills to do anything else. So I'll keep doing this for a while. Do what you know, right? So
yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Megan. I hope to have you back one of these times, and I hope you have a great week. So thank you so much for being here.
I would totally love it. Thank you, Aaron.
All right. Take care, Megan.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.